down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, hello? Good afternoon. Yes, yes, good afternoon.
I would want to hear from Minister Simmons again, so I would look forward to you inviting him back and having that discussion, because he said something that I thought about. He said, well, and this is my interpretation of it. I mean, corporations are not treated across the board as one entity. There are various categories of businesses, which I would imagine various taxes and fees and so on would apply. So I wasn't sure why the minister would want to use the reduction of corporation taxes as a means to suggest that there's no reason for people to be afraid to have...
Hold on. You got me a little confused. As far as I know, the corporation tax has been reduced to 5% across the board.
Yes.
So if you're running a small business or a big business, the corporation tax remains the same.
Exactly.
So you sound to be you appear to be introducing a sliding scale or something.
Yeah,
so
but
just
there's some fees in there that apply to certain businesses. We pay the corporation taxes, but according to some, let me say the small businesses, small enterprises, there are certain fees and so on that apply
such
to
as,
them.
Such as?
So the hairdressers and those people don't have to pay a one-off yearly fee.
You mean registration fees?
Yes, those fees and different kinds of fees that apply to some small businesses, not so?
I suspect that depending upon what business you are in, for instance,
okay.
if you are an architect or an engineer, a lawyer or a doctor, you have
to
pay certain fees. All right,
that's right.
But as it relates to the taxation policy, that's what he was talking about.
Okay, I was thinking that one of the reasons why people would be afraid has nothing to do really with the corporation tax, but they're trying to be exempted from these other fees and so on that they're expected to pay yearly VAT and all of those kinds of things, all right? But he could come back again and discuss it. That's not what I really called to talk about. If you will indulge me, I have a concern, and it has to do with the issue of visitation rights in a COVID environment where we still have COVID protocols to observe. A while ago, during one of the press conferences, I heard the AG address visitation rights. I heard the AG say that the order of the court stands in relation to visitation rights. The AG said Zoom is not visitation or whatever electronic device or source you want to use. He was adamant. He said whatever the court ordered stands. In other words, what the judge ordered does not change.
This is visitation rights in the context of the prison?
Of the child. Oh. Of the father or the mother, whomever has, the court has ordered.
Yeah. I got you. Yes.
And the visitation right should not be restricted. Now, let me say, David, that nothing was wrong with the legal interpretation, and this bothered me for a while, of what the AG said, especially if you remove the human face. I felt that the AG was failing to put a sensible face to the issue,
which I thought,
we were in the midst of COVID. So therefore, the health of the child and protecting the child from any potential exposure or getting in harm's way in terms of contracted COVID, in my view, would have been the priority or should have been the priority in lieu of whatever the court ordered. All right? And to me, I am talking about the human face, is that there's a legal interpretation to that, and the AG was well within his rights.
When you all finish, look, you guys need to... I don't like discrimination of any sort, right?
Right.
So if a child... Most children in Barbados are in the custody of their mothers.
Absolutely.
And if we follow that reasoning, it would mean that many men in the country would not have been able to see their children over the period. They would still be expected to put money there for them, though, and to make sure that they're fed and clothed. But they would be denied. They would be denied the opportunity to interact with their children if we follow that line of reasoning. And I don't.
And David, we are not for purposes right. there. You're making another point. Let me finish. Make the point. You'll see where I'm going with this. We were in the middle of a COVID crisis. The protocols restricted movement. We had the curfew and the stay-at-home measures were in place. I thought that the AG would have exercised his good judgment and show greater care by saying to the public, especially to those impacted by this matter, that, it would not have been law, but it would be by way of advising. He would have spoken to the particular issue and say, look, as adults, as parents, work out something in the best interest of the child.
But why does he say that? Why does he have to say that?
I'm making the point because it's a concern to me, because I believe that no good judge, knowing that there is a COVID situation and the potential danger or harm that could come upon the child, would say that the visitation order still stands without allowing the parents to exercise some discretion. To me, the Zoom would have to come in place of the actual
Hold on a minute. No, we are arguing over this.
No, because
you love too much arguing.
I do not want me to make my point.
Listen to me. I do not see the necessity for the Attorney General of the country to make that statement, in as much as the courts make those interventions from time to time. And I think we would be influenced by the fact that so far, as far as I know, there has been no big issue about this. And people have interpreted it as such. You work to get together to try to get along with one another on an issue such as this. That, to me, does not require any statement from the Attorney General.
But David, if you have an Attorney General laying down the law, addressing to the law, speaking to the matter of the law, right? How are people going to
Attorney General, the Attorney General does not have enough say over the courts
to influence court decisions. The Attorney General to make any legal pronouncement on what any judge ordered. I'm simply saying that there was room for discretion to be made to advisedly tell these people to whom this matter concerned, look, work this out as adults. We are in COVID. Make sure that the interest of the child is first. And that's the only point that I'm making, right? I think that any reasonable judge, especially with these child matters, always puts the interest of the child first. So for me, the Zoom or the telephone conversation would have had to suffice, given that we were in the height of COVID. And then you could resort to the face-to-face visitation rights. But to say what the court has ordered or what the judge says stands, to my mind, was missing the fundamental point.
I would like to say to you.
Yes, say to me.
That when you say that something must be in the interest of the child, you must not only take into consideration contracting COVID, but you must take into consideration how children feel when they are deprived of the opportunity to have access to their parent.
Well, this would have
And therefore, in those circumstances, you expect that people will monitor those things, that two parents will work through the issues and stuff like that.
Reasonable. Some mothers are very vexed with fathers and so on and so forth. So if the visitation right still applies, the father has a right to say, look, I got to see my child. And the mother has a right to say, well, look, this child in this house with me, I know this child has no COVID. I'm not sure what kind of circumstances this child is going to go into, if the child is coming by you or if you're coming here.
You're creating a big stuff about this. This could result, you know, the way things work out in this country.
Yes.
The mother will tell the father, well, you know, I don't have a problem with the child coming with you because, you know, I can take that. But you see that woman that you got there? But the people work those things out. I mean, I don't see that we need to make a big issue out of this. I think there's so many other things out there that we need to look at. I hope that in general terms, you know, the children have, over the COVID period, because children have had to deal with so much in this period, that you don't want to add any additional burden to their shoulders. As simple as that. And therefore, parents got to work it out. Okay. Thank you very much. down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Well, Mr. Abbott.
Welcome. Yes, welcome to the program.
How are you?
I am well.
Okay, you sound well. Due to the fact there's a shortage of time, let me just throw these two little ones at you today. Mr. Ellis, why is that some employers, right, do not like signing the reverse tax paper for their employees? And Mr. Ellis, what I want to ask you, could there be penalized before the courts for not doing so?
And I'm unaware. I can't answer that question for you.
But could there be some sort of justice be brought before these employers who try to treat workers like second-hand citizens?
First, I would have to answer the first question that you've posed. Why is it that they're doing so?
Yes.
I don't know the details. So employers would have to... is it a question of just taking up their time, or is there something else behind that? And how widespread is it?
Mr.
We sit here, in Brass Tacks, and we hear a lot of complaints, but this is not something that I've heard regularly.
Mr. Ellis, you spoke just now about time and what type of time. Mr. Ellis, come on.
How widespread is this?
Man, it is rampant out there, Mr. You got some envious. There's some envious employers out there who use this sort of method when they have a little beef against that said employer. You know, they victimize that employer by refusing to sign the reverse tax papers. And you got another hand too. There's another hand in this here too. Sometimes when you have the green paper, the green slip that there to give you, what time it can take to give a worker who worked for you 10, 15, 20 years, what type of time it can take for you to give them hand over that paper, that green paper, to take into the NIS? This is wickedness among them, Mr. Ellis. There are some employers out there that are above the law, think they are above the law, and someone needs to look into this. The Labor Department needs to get more rampant with them and let them know, listen, y'all not above the law. Hand over the papers. And start treating workers like if workers is some sort of third degree or fourth degree class citizen of this country.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for raising the issue. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Hi. I'm well, and you?
Pretty good. I want to touch here on this issue, the recent occurrence where for personal goods that we're having freight added. Now, the law, to me, in my opinion, does not permit it. When we join this new valuation agreement, you could have certain of your goods without the freights included. And by our action, we decided to have it within the commercial goods.
Be who? You sound as though you're a broker or something.
The government. No, I'm not a broker.
Okay.
Within the government. So, as a result, you would have had choice where you would have either to add it or don't add it. Now, even then, under a previous prime minister, to say the least, there was a flat duty rate which had a $200 value. The $200 value was for three sets of goods, not exceeding $200. Now, there was no freight in there because, as I said, the agreement was not to put freight. Now, if you go even to the Customs Act, the Customs Act tells you at Article 8, which adds in the freight, and this is how it reads. It says, in determining the customs value under paragraph 3, there shall be added to the price actually paid or payable for the imported goods, A, the following to the extent that they are incurred by the buyer. Now, most times, people from diaspora send goods to their families, so they have not actually paid any freight. So they are not incurred anything as buyers. So the freight normally would not be added because they said, and I read that again, the following to the extent that they are incurred. So if the person does not pay that freight, then you can't add it into your value.
How so much money, generally speaking, are you talking about? How high is it?
The freight could be more than the goods. The freight could be, let's say 500 Barbados, and it carries the cost of the goods through the roof. And remember, too, that
when was this change?
This is why I'm saying this has come about of recent in an ad hoc way, because previous to, well, a couple of weeks ago, it was business as usual where it never changed, because Mr. Alfred said that he wants the people in the diaspora to help out the people here in terms of poverty and helping the families. Now, when you put on a freight onto the goods, what are you really doing? You're asking them then to help out the poor families and then for them to be charged on a freight as well. And that was not in the agreement. I could provide that. And that's the customs that I read from, the schedule, which gives rise to the valuation of the goods. So it is wrong. I mean, and it is sad that people are being asked to pay when the law says otherwise. So I think the minister or somebody should come to the program or come to the public, seeing that there's a change which is affecting a lot of people, to come and say what the situation is, whether there's a policy change, then they change the whole policy that was there before. But say something, they just pass it on the people.
sneak it in on you like a thief in the night.
Yeah, like a thief in the night.
That's how it appears.
Right. So, well, no, I know personally that has. I was there. And I know that it come like a thief in the night. Because this is my specialty. The valuation bar is my specialty. And I know it come like a thief in the night.
So effectively, what it does is to make the cost of goods that are sent to people in Barbados higher.
Very
because
much.
They're adding the freight to the cost.
The freight.
And that would also apply to situations where you are buying an item from abroad.
Buying an item from?
Abroad.
Yes. But that
but
was never the intention. Because
in the case, hold on a minute, hold on.
Go ahead.
You address the situation where item was being sent from abroad to somebody here, and you said that previously the freight would not be included in the cost.
No.
In the case where a person has bought an item from abroad, was the freight not included in the cost?
No. Not of a non-commercial amount. Because they tell, even in the customs tariff, there's a flat rate duty where if the goods are $200, you just pay a flat rate of 30% on them. No freight included in that. So it was never included until now. So I think nobody needs to explain it.
Not only is it included, you're saying, but it is also based upon the cost of the item?
No, there's the freight, the cost of the freight. Now.
The cost of the freight, sorry.
Right.
Okay.
So if, let's say you bring a package at FedEx, and FedEx has a charge, let's say the charge at FedEx charges are high. So if the freight now is $200 and your item might be $35, you're going to pay the freight, you're going to pay the duties now on $235.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for drawing it to national attention, because, you know, this is something that you have to watch as well. That sometimes things are introduced and you don't get any notice of it, and you only discover it once something has come for you, and then you realize, but wow, well, this price is astronomical. Why is it so high in price? It is only then that you discover. And this is not something that should be introduced in that kind of way. No, there's always that possibility that there was some notice that was put in the press, or somebody said something on the radio and you might not have heard about it. And in those circumstances, they will claim, but you know, it isn't that it came in like a thief in the night. We actually said it, but unfortunately, you didn't hear it. So whether that's the case or not, we'd like to get some confirmation and some explanation as to why they have done it this way, especially recognizing that it might catch so many people off guard. Thank you very much. Dr. Brastax.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
I'm on.
Good afternoon. Yes, you are.
Yeah, good afternoon, David. I was willing on things a little after 12, after 1. Anyhow, I started getting on, but I wanted to reach in with the minister when he was there, when he talking. You mean these people today don't understand where a country need to go? As far as they're talking about oil is concerned, just to achieve money, you know that there are hollow holes on the Barbados. There are wells and Woodburn and them places, so that already give up. So all the water is in stream. You pump water up, the rainfall, the aquifer becomes replenished. What does replenish the oil? Nothing. I spoke to already a worker at the oil company already. I asked him what they do when the oil wells were empty. They just pour a quick drain hard cement into the shaft hole, and that's all. We in a dangerous position. This is no time to go on now and bring in foreign firm to come and dig oil on the southeast of Barbados. What about the generation to come? We continue to endanger, but we have politicians, senseless, ignorant, that don't know nothing about environment. They don't care about money. I'm sorry to say that the stage that we are at.
All right, sir. We gotta go. Thank you very much. This has been Down to Brass Tacks. I'm David Ellis, thanking you on behalf of my technical operator and producer, Dennis Johnston. Do have a great afternoon and a pleasant weekend.